In this episode, Serenity Now for Entrepreneurs chats with Mary Villani of TD Bank. She discusses the increase in fraud as it relates to business. The risk is real, and fraud continues to become more sophisticated. How is this relevant to you? Mary shares this shocking statistic in our conversation.
And 33% of all business failures or bankruptcies are due to theft and/or fraud. So that's a huge contributor to why a business will not succeed.
We thought that email transfers were safe, but what does Mary say about using this payment method in business?
It really wasn't made for business to business or business to personal. And so we don't love email transfers, or I don't love email transfers.
What is the solution? Learn what to look out for and how to protect your business from fraud. Some of what we cover requires your attention, but others need attention from your team. We hope that this conversation will bring you some serenity now. Let's take a listen. Welcome to this episode of Serenity Now from Entrepreneurs. We have Mary Villani of TD Bank joining us. And Mary brings a very unique level of experience because she has grown through the banking industry, starting at a teller and then growing and into regional and, you know, a variety of different roles with 30 plus years of experience. And so Rita, our Serenity sister, had brought Mary to us and introduced her to our team. And so I'd love, Rita, if you could give an introduction about Mary. How did you meet her? And maybe a fun fact around how long you've known each other and the expertise that she also brings to the audience today.
Mary and I met when I was working at the Business Development Bank and she was at TD. We're both supporting entrepreneurs in their journey in life and supporting them with both banking and credit facilities. And Mary was the area manager of, I believe, the Tri-Cities and North Vancouver.
And Burnaby. And
yeah, just you had a huge, huge area. So we worked alongside many clients together, and that's how we got to know each other a lot better. Since then, you've now progressed over to your new role, and now you're, I believe, a manager of cash management on the commercial side. So perhaps you can share a little bit more about what you do now.
Thank you so much, Rita. Yes, when you and I first met, I was involved with small business, but we never called it small, as you'll recall. We always called it business. And then I transitioned over to the commercial banking team. And so now I tend to more help the medium to larger businesses, the owners and their employees, on how to manage their technology to prevent fraud, to send money out of their business with online wire payments or paying their employees with electronic funds transfer, or bringing money into their business using a remote deposit capture scanner for checks so they don't have to go to a branch, or bringing in wire payments or electronic funds transfer payments, that type of thing. And then, of course, making sure that they earn interest on their investments and their larger operating balances. And so that's pretty much what anything that doesn't have to do with credit is what I help clients with.
Great. So you've run the full circle on supporting clients.
That's really interesting. Our firm actually uses a lot of those tools, those cash management tools. And one of the things that we're always, you know, really concerned about is fraud. So I'm sure this is something that you must cover or see or help clients prevent a lot of. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about that.
I wish I didn't have as much experience as I do with fraud. And I must say that the fraudsters are becoming more and more sophisticated and very patient. So it's quite interesting to me. I was looking up some statistics, and 71% of businesses reported being targets of payment fraud in 2021, which is up from, I think, 60% in 2014. So it's quite a jump. And 75% of treasury and finance professionals like yourselves did report that email compromise was the source of the fraud, while 54% of those reported financial losses as a result. So they didn't just have the attempt, they had the loss. And 33% of all business failures or bankruptcies are due to theft and or fraud. So that's a huge contributor to why a business will not succeed. And most of the businesses that have experienced fraud do not believe that remote work was a contributing factor, which I think is interesting because a lot of people will think that it's because we've gone to remote work and maybe there aren't the same security processes in place, but that hasn't been the case. And we're seeing a wide variety of fraud. But the number one reason for fraud has not changed, and it's check fraud. And so one of the things that cash management professionals will try to do at any financial institution, doesn't matter who you're with, is they will try to get a business to use less checks or to completely remove checks from their day-to-day operation and use other payment options. 33% of the business-to-business payments are still via check. And so it's still a preferred way of making payments. But really, with the lower cost of technology and the inherent fraud prevention in technology, it makes a lot of sense to move from checks if you can.
So just curious, so we actually, believe it or not, I'm actually kind of shocked now that I'm thinking about this. We don't actually issue actual checks anymore, but we do use a service called Pluto. If we have to issue a check, we get Pluto to issue the check. So is that ad security or would that be still considered issuing a check?
I wouldn't be an expert on Pluto or speaking to Pluto. Mm-hmm. I think if I was looking at Pluto, I'd want to see what security measures they have in place. But the receiver is still going to have your account number on that check, which is not the worst thing. The real problem with checks is that they go out in the mail and they can get intercepted and then they can get changed or they can get replicated. That's the real number one problem with checks. So if you're doing your checks through Pluto, if they are electronic checks, so there's no physical check being received and it's being transmitted in a secure fashion, I would say, yes, that is a great way to reduce your risks because you're wanting to not have that physical check floating around in the mail system or being able to be picked up by a fraudster. That's really the main issue.
Oh, I'm just going to clarify a couple of the points that Mary had mentioned. You unloaded a lot of stats for us. And we've gone through this with many clients and in both email and on the check side. So one of the things that I just want to just add a bit more insight on when it comes to checks, we issued a check. It went to the right vendor. The vendor did not receive it. Somebody else took it and cashed it through twice. And the vendor kept calling the client saying, "Where's my check? Where's my check?" Until finally somebody looped me in and I said, "Hold on, let's have a chat and walk through and figure it out. This is the double cashing moment." Called the bank, which happened to be TD. Thank you. And you guys helped work and sort through the whole issue. So that's kind of the example of how a check can be double cashed or many more times. So you'd have to actually put a stop payment on that. And that was one of the first mechanisms of saying no more. So no to triple cash. But you guys took care of it. So we had appreciated that. And the second part was an email. So we had sent an electronic transfer and it was intercepted on the client side. So we were trying to pay someone else. Someone else got access to their email and they cashed it into their own account. So that was not a check. It was an email e-transfer. And again, it took us about, 15 days to go back and forth and then called our friends at TD again and said, hey, what's going on? And so we were able to do a little bit of work, but the majority had to be done on the other side. They had to trace it.
So does auto deposit solve that issue? It does, I guess, eh?
Not necessarily, because you're sending it to an email address. And so if that email address has been compromised, you could still run into an issue. Okay. Or if you've sent it to the wrong email address, but you're off, you know, if somebody's given you an email address that has an I, but you put a 1, it could go into the wrong account. Mm. To be quite transparent, we do not like, maybe I should just say, I do not like email transfers for businesses. I think it was created for a person-to-person, quick, easy, low dollar value transfer. Here's $25 for the restaurant we went to. It really wasn't made for business to business or business to personal. And so we don't love email transfers, or I don't love email transfers. And I don't support email transfers in my line of work. I have clients that use it, and I try to scare them a little bit to get them to use other forms of payment. Also, I would think accountants would not like email transfer, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. And the reason being is that there's really not much in the way of accounting records, bookkeeping records, when you're doing an email transfer. So I always try to get clients to use something that has a better paper trail, more security, better chance of recovering the funds, and just moreover, better security.
Oh, so interesting food for thought.
Yeah, let me ask a question about that, because you know, at our company, we've moved to doing EFT payments. So we have to log, you know, a company's, say, their bank account information into our system. And I always feel like that's a little bit scary to have a copy of their bank ID information, or not ID, but like the transit number and their account number. But hearing the different things that you're sharing with us today, Mary, like, what does that leave us with EFT as being potentially safer? So EFT being electronic funds transfer, where it's directly from my bank account to somebody else's. And what I do like about that is the ability for me to, as the business owner, type in a password. So it's almost like someone giving me a check and me signing it, as opposed to just having a couple of staff members decide to, you know, send and pay, make payment, and then maybe they typed in 14,000 instead of 1,400, and there it goes, you know. And so it gives me an ability to do a quick audit before the money goes out. What are your thoughts on that?
We do like electronic funds transfer very much for payments, payroll, vendor payments. If I have a client that is going to be sending a large sum of money, I usually recommend a wire payment. The reason being is when you're sending electronic funds transfer, as long as the account number, bank number, and transit number that you input is an actual account number, the funds will go in there. And so if you've been given the wrong account number, but that account number exists for someone, that money will go into their account. You do have a 5-day, what we call countermand request opportunity, where you can pull the money back if the money is still there. And that is also helpful. But if you're going to be wiring a large amount, like $250,000, for example, I would recommend sending a wire payment, because the receiving institution has to match the beneficiary name exactly to the beneficiary name, in addition to the account number that's on the wire. The other thing is, though, that I have clients who don't want to spend the extra $15 to wire a payment. And so I'll say, okay, that's fine. Send the EFT, the electronic funds transfer, but send a dollar. Get the receiver to confirm that they've received the dollar, and then send the remaining amount. If you're going to do it this way, and I can't make you do one thing or another, then that would be my recommendation. And you're right, what you were just saying, Stephanie, with EFT and wire payments, you can set them up so that they're dual authentication or dual approval, which means that two people have to approve that wire or that EFT before it leaves the office or the bank, which is an excellent security measure as well. One thing I'd like to mention, actually, if you don't mind, with EFTs and wires, we always recommend that if somebody is giving you their information for you to send them a payment, to not only take that request by email or by fax, if you still use fax, but also call them at a number that you have previously have on your system, where you know that that's how you can contact them, and verify that they are making that request, or if they're making any changes. Because clients tend not to change their account number that often if they can avoid it. Because as we all know, it's not easy moving, you're changing an account or moving banks. And so it should be a red flag for you and your employees if you are receiving a change by an employee or a vendor to change their account information.
Oh, that's a good tip. So interesting. I like that.
So tell us a story maybe, Mary, how you helped a client move or support them in their growth with your cash management services.
What tends to happen is you'll have a client who has started out being a sole operator and doing all of the banking themselves. And they're doing all their own IT and they're doing all their own everything. But then they grow and they grow and they grow. And it tends to be that the last thing that they relinquish control over are the finances. Yep. But when they do, they need to be very cautious. And so if they're going to have employees doing the banking, there needs to be some control in place. And so on our commercial banking platform, we set somebody up as the system administrator, or basically the quarterback of the services. And that quarterback determines who has access to what services, which accounts. And the quarterback or the system administrator should generally be one of the signing officers of the business, or at least someone fairly senior in the business. And then once we get them to set up all their the employees that are entrusted with the different payment services, we do train them. So we train the system administrator, we train the employees, and we also train the system administrator on how to review what we call audit logs. So an audit log basically will tell that system administrator who accessed the online banking, when they accessed it, and what they did when they were in it. And we do ask them to scan it on a regular basis so that they know that their employees are doing what they should be doing when they're logged in. And it's just a great way to help prevent employee theft or internal fraud.
Fantastic. So what about the small businesses that are being proactive, but not yet what you consider a medium to large size businesses? How can they get your support, Mary? What do they do?
Well, we do have the same commercial banking platform for small business clients. They just wouldn't be dealing with me directly, although I have been known to provide support to our business advisors in the branches to give them more information and to give them more support. But you can use this system regardless of the size of your business. And what it does is it prevents you from having employees sharing an online access or a sign in with a password. You don't ever want your employees sharing passwords. You don't want them sharing a bank card, because then there's really no accountability and there's no way to trace who's doing what. And so we generally recommend that any business where they're not just the sole entrepreneur doing the finances themselves, think about having access to a commercial banking platform. And those sole entrepreneurs, and actually all clients, should be doing daily account reconciliation. Because as you mentioned, Rita, a little while ago, those clients that had checks clear their account twice or three times, they would have caught that earlier. And you only have a certain number of days in which you can submit a claim before you lose recourse. And so if you're doing daily account reconciliation, you're going to catch those items in time to be compensated financially.
Okay. Wow. That's so much information. And I mean, I've been in business for a dozen years and thinking like, I kind of got this. And I'm learning new things on this call. And it's great, because I think a lot of company business owners, people who have access to financial information, it's a great way for them to just think a little bit about whether or not they have the right audits in place, if they have the, you know, the right levels of authority in place for a lot of the banking that they do. And so we're going to go into our quick fire round. And I'm going to go ahead and actually start with Rita, and we'll do Candace, and then Mary, and I'll end with myself. But as with any quick fire that we do at Serenity Now, it could be a tidbit that we had learned from Mary today. It could be an example of fraud that we have heard from our clients, or something else that we feel would be valuable for our audience. So Rita, if I can kick that off with you.
You always kick it off with me, Steph. So I just want to say thank you again to Mary for joining. I think the audience might find it an odd episode because we were a little more quiet. You can't see our faces, but we were kind of aghast at some of the stats you were sharing with us, Mary, today. And perhaps I think my quick fire would be, if you haven't revisited your cash management systems or policy lately, perhaps now is a good time to revisit that. And I love the fact that it doesn't matter which institution you're with, there is likely a platform that you can use. And I'm sure if you reach out to your banker, I'm sure they would be happy to help out simply because they don't want this to happen to others as well. I will do one other tidbit of information, but I'll wait till everybody else does their quick fire. So I'll hand it off perhaps to Candace.
Yeah, I just want to add and say that I highly recommend one of these platforms for any business that has somebody doing banking for them. And one of the benefits of it is that you can also add your accountant. They don't have to be able to do anything. They can just see things, which is really very useful. They can pull bank statements, they can see transactions, and they don't have the power to make any transactions, but sometimes the power is in the knowledge. So if you're of a size of a business that could use this platform, I highly recommend it. I have two or three clients on a similar platform, and it just makes everybody's life so much easier. So,
all right, Mary.
I would say I'd like to just finish off my part with just be careful. So if you receive an email, don't click on a link. If you are asked to change information, verify it by a second method. Train your employees to not cruise different internet sites on their work computer. Don't click on memes and GIFs and different links, because then what will happen is you will have often you'll have ransomware or malware on your computer system and you won't even know it. And we did have a client who we believe had malware installed, and the fraudster was very patient. They just sat around and they observed and they watched, and then they redirected all bank emails to a different spot so that none of the business employees were receiving the bank emails. It was the fraudster that was receiving them. And the fraudster was responding as if they were them. Very clever. And the way you catch something like that is by having a relationship and calling the client or having the client call you. It's all about relationship. And that is how we beat fraudsters.
Interesting. So scary how patient everyone is. I mean, an example at Granted of fraud that was happening, and who knows what was in the link because our team was smart enough to not click into it, but they were able to somehow access my name to be the sender of an email. And so at being the CEO of the business, you know, you respond to your CEO's emails, hopefully. And so, you know, the staff member raised it with me and said, screenshotted it and just showed me. And I have to work with my parents all the time because they're a little bit more elderly and they might see a name, even if it just says Stephanie, they think it might be me. And I encourage them to take a look at the details of the email, because sometimes it's like abc123@outlook.ca or whatever it might be. And it's some weird email address. And so unless it is one that they recognize, you know, and we use really strong hosts for our emails, it's usually one that probably contains some malware or some ransomware or something like that. One thing that I did learn for sure, Mary, amongst all the wisdom that you shared today, was the reviewing of the audit log. That is something that probably am speaking more so for myself, but I would imagine other listeners kind of relating to this, is I'm going through an online banking system. There are security things that are already in place with a banking system. So I would just assume, right? Never assume, that everything is hunky-dory and it's all fine. And so being able to review the audit logs and hearing the statistics about how many companies go under as a result of fraud is staggering. And so it's just so good to have an expert like you be able to share this information with our listeners. I'm going to point it back to Rita to actually share her tidbit and then maybe close out the episode as well.
I'm just going to put the spotlight back on Mary. It's not just myself who thinks Mary is absolutely amazing. Right now, this year in 2023, she will be recognized with the Association of Women in Finance Awards. She is going to be receiving the Lifetime Achievement Award, and we're so very happy and proud for you. So from the Serenity Sisters, we love you, congratulations, and thank you for all the insight you've shared today. I just don't have the right words for you, Mary, but just thank you.
No, I'm humbled and so pleased to be here, and thank you for lifting me up, Rita.
Congratulations. Thank That's you. Such Congratulations. An honor.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and picked up some good tips and best practices that would benefit your entrepreneurial journey. Remember, none of the content in this podcast should be relied upon as standard legal or business advice. Always consult a professional for your specific business. You may know someone who could benefit from this podcast. Please share it with your business community, and perhaps it can give an entrepreneur you know some serenity now.